What a day, what a day, what a day. My name is Ryan Hansen. Thank you for joining me on this episode of EQ Book Club. Today I'm joined by Brett Sharp, Head of Customer Experience at Macquarium, based out of Atlanta. And I'm really excited to talk to him because I really enjoy intentionally connecting emotional intelligence to the workplace and especially the way businesses connect with their customers. And Brett has a lot of thoughts and experience with this. So I figured we'd just get right into it. What do you think, Brett?
Sounds great to me. Thanks for having me, Ryan. I'm excited.
Of course. Thank you for joining me. So let's first jump into, before we can get to the customer side, let's talk about the employee side. The benefits of growth mindset mentality for your personal and professional development. This connects to some specific parts of emotional intelligence being self-awareness and self-management, the first half of kind of the totality of EQ. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. And let's get into it. So a little bit about me is in my background, I really started my career as a research professional. So doing a lot of qualitative research, talking to employees, to customers, to prospects, you know, through just different interviews, you know, focus groups, one-on-one sessions. And one of the things that really kind of stood out to me is that there's different ways that people are like either really closed in terms of what is now defined, I think, in as a fixed mindset, which is like, oh, I'm limited in terms of my ability to learn. I'm limited in terms of, you know, my talents, you know, everything kind of out of my control. And so then there's the opposite end of that spectrum, which are people that are like, bring it on. I'm in control of my own destiny. I can make everything happen. And I was always really fascinated to be able to figure out like, why is that? And I think the fixed mindset versus growth mindset really has a lot of the foundation of how people go about it, how they take on challenges and how they think about problems.
Absolutely. I think one thing that has come to me recently, actually through some work that I was doing, is that fixed mindset is, it is what it is, you know, to boil it down, it is what it is. And that's how I am going to be or whatever, or that's how this is going to be. It is what it is. And that growth mindset is, it is what it is until it becomes what I make of it. And in that you have that intentionality of choice. And it is what it is that you have no choice. Universe is set. You are what you are. Things are the way they are. Intentionality of choice. It becomes what you make of it. And I just want to pull that in real quick for the listeners of that kind of differentiation between the fixed and the growth mindset, the closed and the open.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on. And I think what's really fascinating is, you know, you go back into the psychology and the psyche behind it, is if I say everything's out of my control, then I'm limited in terms of what I'm motivated to go forward with, what I'm, you know, how I tackle problems, because I'm like, it's a problem. There's nothing I can really do about it. So mm-hmm. I think it causes people to kind of get stalled, get in a rut sometimes. And not a fixed mindset is always a bad thing. It can be a very good thing in certain situations. But the growth mindset, or as you think about it, is just saying, I can get better. I can learn. I can, you know, tackle things in a new and different way. It opens up your mind to an idea of, so I see a problem, but now I'm seeking for alternatives. Now I'm, you know, motivated and inspired to say, hey, this was a problem, but, you know, I solved a solution like this before. Guess what? This is just a little bit harder. Let me see what I can do. So it gives you that self-empowerment and that motivation that I think really inspires a lot of us.
Absolutely. So how does that specifically connect to that self-awareness? Like how do we discover when we are in that fixed mindset and when we can make choices, which kind of is the self-management of moving into that growth mindset and into that openness of being able to change?
Yeah. So, you know, as you've been following, you know, the emotional intelligence, a lot of it, this is really that kind of internal evaluation, that self-aware and going forward. And I think when I think about customer experiences or employee experiences, a lot of it is when conflict arises or people don't know what to do, they haven't really done that internal reflection. They haven't said, how can I control the situation or control the behavior? And I think, you know, again, so if you have that growth mindset, you can feel like you're empowered to control that a little bit more. If you're fixed, you tend to be a little bit more defensive or just, hey, let somebody else, you know, kind of deal with it. So I think it actually helps with building and developing your emotional intelligence just by giving you the idea to say, I can check myself, make sure that I'm really doing the right things before I go into kind of the outwardly. How's it affecting others?
Yeah, I think it's also important to pay attention to there. A concept that's pretty difficult until you've practiced it a lot, which is control or letting go of control. And because what you were talking about is with yourself. What am I in control of with myself, and what should I let go of control of about me? And that thing that you should let go of control of is the things that are outside of you. And when you are defensive or aggressive in some way, that is you trying to actually control outside factors that you have no control over. So that I think it's important to bring some clarity to what is control, or at least what is in our control and what isn't. And that's something that's not easy and isn't going to be solved just by listening to this episode of the podcast. But that is where kind of emotional intelligence starts, and you start taking and making the choices that need to happen so that you can gain more control over your life. And ironically, it is by letting go of control over everyone else's life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to think about it, because, again, even as we think about how people are interacting and engaging, a lot of where things tend to go awry are when we don't let that, you know, we let others impact us and we get to that defensive or deflection or, you know, any of those issues. We need to just say, what can we control, and find other ways to kind of move around it. So I like that approach.
Absolutely. And connected to that is, as you said, engaging with other people. So feedback, taking feedback, giving feedback. How do we do that in a more emotionally intelligent space? How do we become aware of others at this higher level, especially when we don't have awareness of ourselves? And it's interesting, because I know a lot of people who do have a lot of social awareness, but have zero self-awareness, and that they can feel like they're really good at dealing with feedback or engaging with others because they have a lot of social awareness. But when you don't have self-awareness, it really kind of stunts that process of these conversations and how to really connect with others, because you're only connecting to them. They're not necessarily connecting to you, because you don't know who you are and they can't know who you are, if that's the case as well.
Yeah. No, I love that approach, and it's so true. I mean, I don't know how many different conversations I've been in where people have great social awareness, and then they just go on and on, or they're completely missing the boat in terms of what the, you know, their internal, you know, awareness is. And so I think, to me, there's kind of a blend between, okay, the fixed and growth mindset and feedback, in terms of, let's start with this idea called active listening, you know, where really you're listening more than you're talking.
It's amazing.
How often does it happen? People are like, oh, I understand. And then they go on and on and on and on. And you don't get a break. They don't ask questions. So to me, active listening, which is really the idea of kind of, I want to listen more than I talk. I want to really focus on what people are saying, understand how their behaviors are, because that's a trigger for their emotions. And then you can figure out how to react to a scenario, a situation. That, to me, is that biggest gap to say, are we actually pausing long enough to understand how others are taking in that information and what they're saying?
Right. And what you're saying there, to me, sounds like empathy and having empathy for what they're saying, and, you know, why are they saying it? Not just what they're saying, but why are they saying it? And that also hits some gray area of, well, you know, don't make assumptions about what they really mean behind their words, but try to see all possibilities, all perspectives of why they may say something to you or say something in the way that they did in that moment. And especially, as you're saying, how we react. So like taking the time to take in that information, that self-management of, all right, I have this information now. How do I react or respond is really the correct word there.
Well, I think what's interesting is because if you're talking all the time, you're not really paying attention to what the other perspective is, mm-hmm. right? So that really gets to kind of one of the key three types of empathy there is. So if you're talking, you can't be empathetic. You know, you're thinking about what to say next and what your point is. You can't really understand the other person's perspective. So if we actually break down kind of the three different types of empathy, the first one is really starting with cognitive, you know, empathy. So do I have the ability to understand something from your perspective? I have to listen to hear your perspective. If I'm talking, I don't know your perspective. I know you're nodding. I know you're bored. I know you're yawning, but I don't know what your perspective is. So I think it's really starting with cognitive empathy.
Is that critical thinking? Is that like taking critical thinking to create empathy?
I think it's just really, you know, kind of like, do I have an appreciation or understanding? Like, am I really hearing what your problem is? And if not, then ask questions, right? Mm-hmm. That's where it gets to a basic of, if I'm talking and I'm giving my point, I don't get it. If I'm letting you talk and I'm still not really understanding it, then I can ask questions and probe. And so that's where I'm starting to really explore the discovery phase, if you will.
Right. A lot of people just skip from the I don't understand, and because they don't understand, instead of asking questions, they just put into their own input, and then you're just off track and you've lost the momentum that you had.
Yeah. So I think it all starts with that discovery. You have to be able to listen, make sure you understand, and if you don't, ask the questions before you can then get into the next phase of empathy, which is really effective empathy. Which is, are you able to kind of mirror or share, you know, other people call this kind of the emotional side. I'm not good at this. I will tell you that, like, I'm not great at all forms of empathy. I spend all my time dealing with it, but I'm not great at it. I know that I can see how people are feeling. I can understand the situation they're going to, but I don't know how to share them with them. I don't know how to mirror. Sure. So the behavior, and that's one that I struggle with all the time. But the people that I know, like my wife, and I've got some friends that just do this beautifully. It's awesome to see, because not only do I now understand what you're going through, but I'm there right with you. I'm right. You know, you're angry. I'm angry. You're sad. I'm sad with you. Like it's crazy how people can do that, and it just feels like you're not in it alone anymore.
Absolutely.
And so I think that goes to a lot of how do we respond in the right way, mm-hmm. Right? With a lot of businesses don't, a lot of employees don't, a lot of, you know, colleagues don't, you know, so I think that misses.
I think, and first of all, let me ask a question. Is that, you said effective, is that affective? A-F-F? Okay. Affective empathy. So that one is interesting to me, because I also struggle with that, or, you know, it's not at the level that I would like it to be at. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes with things that I've talked about on this podcast before, but just growing up, kind of there's a toxic male way of thinking where we don't show emotion for a really long time or ever, or, you know, don't necessarily know how to in the correct way that allows us to engage with our emotions. And then once we are at a point where we are trying to be empathetic, then, you know, people don't feel like we are engaging with them empathetically because we don't know how to connect on that affective level, as you're talking about. And, you know, it just takes that time of doing the internal work of connecting with your own emotions so that you can recognize those experiences that you've already had. All of us have had all of these emotional experiences. It's just whether we're connecting with them or not, or accepting that we've had them or are with them, or, you know, currently have them. And so, yeah, if you're trying to train that affective empathy, that is the way to go. It's another self-awareness thing. You have to connect with your own emotions so that you can connect with other people's.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I struggle with that. I'm probably going to overstep by saying that maybe it's more effective for, I mean, guys have more of that issue than females, but I don't know, maybe it's just you and I, you know, in terms of how we were growing up and what's there. But I sometimes, even if you can't do it and fully connect, just acknowledging it and that you're there is really a lot of it. And I think that also kind of gets into that just empathetic part of it, which is letting them just know you're there, letting them, you know, be appropriate for the situation, showing that you're concerned and that you understand their feelings and emotions they're going through. You don't have to have an answer. You don't have to do anything. Sometimes just sitting there, you know, just kind of acknowledging it. And I think that's the other type of empathy that we really talk about that I can do well with as long as I don't have to take an action or go further with it.
Right. Right. Was that the all three types of empathy?
Yeah. So cognitive, which is really understanding it. Affective, which is mirroring or sharing their feelings. And then empathetic, which is really, you know, just recognizing it, feeling it and showing that you have a concern. And for me, one of those is just that, like a lot of people, I care deeply for them. Like you think of a personal loss or somebody that's gone through a divorce or something that's just really difficult. And a loss can be anything. I failed at a project or I had, you know, something that just didn't achieve as well as I want. Whatever that emotion is, they don't have to always be, you know, death and marriage and all this kind of stuff. But it's just a loss is letting people know that you care about them as a person. You might not be able to recognize what they're feeling at that time or have a perspective that you don't have what they have. You know, somebody that has kids and, you know, isn't a parent, you can't have that same emotion, but you can let them know that you understand and you care for them as people and as individuals, and that you know that they're struggling. And I think that's one thing that we could all do better.
Yeah.
In our personal and professional lives, you know, one day, let's see, you know, I understand it's tough sometimes.
Well, along these lines, what else does empathy help us do? What are there other skills that are improved by it, or are there actions that are made easier through having empathy?
So kind of taking it back to a business perspective is I think empathy is really kind of the key to building trust. Empathy is the ability to connect with someone personally. So if you think about interactions you have at a bank, you know, or a grocery store or at a call center, when you're having a problem, you know, your internet's not working right and you're calling somebody, whatever the problem might be, often what happens is people jump straight into, oh my God, I'm angry, I have an upset. And even the call center reps are not always trained to be able to sit and stop and listen to the problem. They're like, oh, let's just, I have a path, a script, a formula to run through. And they're not really developing that. Oh, I'm sorry to hear it. You know, hey, so here's what I'm understanding. I'm sure this is affecting your business, right? So you start to use empathy to ask questions, reaffirm, build that trust. And I think when you do that in any interaction, you know, you're at the grocery store, you know, it really starts to develop a relationship and a bonding. And when you bond with the people that are serving you, you tend to, you know, have a little bit more flexibility, a little more openness, a little more willing to kind of go to the next level. And I think that's really the power and the benefit of it. Think about it for your colleagues. Now I've empathized with you on something that you felt was a loss. And next time you're like, oh, you know what? Let's invite Ryan. You know, Ryan's a good guy. Let me visit. Right. It just changes the dialogue. It changes the relationship. It changes how you connect with people. And I think that's one of the really important parts is that you can't really have good relationships, good experiences with as an employee, as a customer, as a prospect, as a human being without building those bonds and forming those relationships.
I've also noticed that, well, as you said, trust, I think that, you know, another direction we can take that is just teamwork in general, you know, people's ability to feel that their voice is heard and therefore they're going to be more creative openly. You know, people are all creative in their own brains, but it's 100% like every single person is creative in a different way, but it's whether they're willing to let that creativity out is completely based on trust. And You know, the ability for collaboration of a team completely hinges on that, on the empathetic abilities of the teammates, really.
Yeah, what's interesting is I've been in a lot of meetings, you know, with business, and the leadership will come in and they'll say, here's what's going on, and then ask for feedback. And nobody says anything. They're afraid to say a word because they don't know what's going on, because there's not that bond. There's not that trust that's been there because they haven't developed it. And so I think a lot of it is you've got to be willing to give that vulnerability out. Right. You've got to be open. And so to me, the idea of kind of how we give feedback is another one that really is critical. So there's this concept called radical candor. There's a book out there by Kim Scott that was done, which is really a way that a lot of people say, oh, I'm direct. I'm, you know, I give my opinion. I let people know. And I'm like, well, that's not really radical candor, right? So if you think about radical candor, it's really asking for permission, thinking about the outcomes for that person, having it be to their best benefit, and being very just straightforward and objective. If they're not open to it, you don't do it at this time. You save it for another time. And by doing that, and with the combined with empathy, active listening, you're actually able to tell anybody anything. Like, Ryan, right. I can sit there and say, hey, are you okay? Can I give you some feedback? You're like, yeah, I'm open to it. And I'm like, I noticed that every time you do these podcasts, you know, you have some really creative ideas. You go into some fascinating in-depth stories that you share on yourself. Well, okay, that's great, positive feedback, but it could also be negative.
Right.
You know, you could say, hey, Brad, are you open to it? And here's some feedback for you on ways to improve. And I say, okay, I'm open to it. And then you tell me, Brad, you use too much, you know, and so make you, you know, sound less professional. I'm like, oh, okay, now let me find a way to change that outcome.
Sure.
And so it's people who have that trust, they have that bonding, and they can just have those difficult, more direct conversations. And I think we're afraid of those conversations a lot.
I completely agree. And I think on top of that, you might have some thoughts about the structure of the way feedback comes in the business world in the context of networks. You know, there are different types of networks, whether it's your organization is hierarchical, or it comes from LinkedIn, where you kind of all the people that you're interacting with, you're now interacting with them because you've been liking their posts, so you already kind of agree with them in a general way, or otherwise, and feedback can really be improved or more difficult to connect with, depending on the structure of your network.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting one. There's actually a really cool Harvard Business Review article that kind of gets into how people get information in the business networks. So I think we typically start thinking with information's cascaded down, right? Leadership down to managers, down to employees, on and on and on. Kind of the waterfall idea. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great when you're trying to share information about, you know, structures or what the company's doing, strategies, et cetera. But I think it's a very different network with the same people in the same company. When you think about who do I go to for advice, you know, those are more informal networks, or mm-hmm. they're based on, you know, subject matter expertise, or who do you know that you feel you can trust? So you actually say, oh, Ryan, he's the expert on emotional intelligence. You know, Brett, he's process improvement or customer experience. So you form these little kind of pods of in your network of people that you can go to when you have a specific topic or situation you want to talk to. And that's great, but that has nothing to do with the hierarchical, the org structure. Mm-hmm. But then there's a deeper one that's even kind of more informal, which is the idea of who do I trust? You know, this happens when mergers, acquisitions, all that kind of stuff happen. But it's like, who do I go to that's going to know the scoop? Or who do I know that I can confide something in? Or who do I know will have information on, hey, is somebody let go? Or is somebody new? Did they just hire? Is there going to be an opportunity over here? Whatever the questions might be, right? A trust network is a very different dynamic. And that's all about relationships. It's all about the bonding. Yeah. So, yeah, we can share the link for the HBR article in this as well, because I think.
Sure. Yeah, happily. I love HBR.
Yeah.
Let's get into something that I do that is a common word in the business world these days and means something different to different people. I am not necessarily the biggest fan of this because of the misuse in the business world of what coaching is, but I'm a coach. And there's not really another way. I'm a partner, first and foremost. That's what I am. And I'm a specialist in what I do, and I am a designer. But all in all, the easiest way to say it is that I'm a coach, right? So tell me a little bit more about what coaching is in the context of business, or in general.
Yeah, no, I love it. And actually, you're a good coach from everything that I can tell. So don't leave yourself too much on that one. But I think coaching is one of those areas that most people are just really missing from their personal or professional lives. Mm-hmm. So to me, the idea is think of coaching in terms of you're not the one doing the work, right? You're really providing the guidance, the suggestions, the framework for others to go and do that work, to think it through themselves and to be able to know how to react in a situation or a scenario.
Absolutely.
So coaching, I wouldn't necessarily advise trying to do with your wife, but it can work with or spouse, but it can work in almost any other relationship, mm-hmm. Personally or professionally. So I think a lot of it is, when we think of coaching, typically it's misused a lot in the fact that most managers, most people that are trying to coach is that, oh, I'll just tell you how to do it.
Exactly.
Go do this. Or have you tried that? You know, and it's really problem solving is what it is. It's not coaching. When I think about coaching, I think it's really more of asking questions to really understand and have they thought through the process, mm-hmm. or have they, are there new ways that they should be thinking through it to go and try to solve for themselves?
Right. Using your brain to engage somebody else's brain in doing brain stuff.
Exactly. All of that important brain stuff. So yeah, it's really just the series of questions, you know, how they thought about the situation, you know, what's the desired outcome? What are the challenges? You know, so it's really all of these questions that are like, what alternatives, which ones are likely to succeed? How do you go forward? So it's not telling them what to do. It's not giving them a playbook or saying, here, go do this. It's just asking them to think through it in terms of, now, next time I'm faced with this kind of situation or scenario, do I have the right tools? I've now got the process. I've now figured out how to do it and become better at it.
Mm-hmm. And I would add that a good coach is not only asking them the questions, but teaching them through these asking of the questions how to ask themselves these questions on a more regular basis.
Yeah. I used to have a boss that started my career very early on. And, you know, he started me on this idea of coaching because he had a very simple model to it. But he's like, every time you have a problem, have you thought through it? Make sure you've done that. Two, have you come up with alternatives? Okay. And three, have you come up with what are something that is outside of what we normally do? Now you can come to me and say, hey, here's the problem. Here's what I've thought of. Here's what are some way outside the box. And here's what I think. How do you feel about it? And it was really more getting the approval of that, or what did I miss, or what didn't I think about? But it really was exactly this coaching. He taught me how to think about the problem all the way through to the end and come up with a solution. And then we were trying to figure out what was missing. That was brilliant.
Yeah. Some good old critical thinking.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's in the Lean Startup by Eric Ries, there is the concept of the five whys, and it is meant for production situations and the idea of, okay, something's broken. Why is it broken? And then you figure out why it's broken. Now, why did that happen? Okay, you figure out why that happened. Now, why did that happen? You figure out why that happened. Now, why did that happen? And boom, somewhere in those whys, it always comes back to human error. And I think what is more interesting about that concept is just directly applying it to humans. And when something is wrong, ask yourself why. Give yourself the honest truth, whatever that truth is. Now, why is that happening? Give yourself another truth. Why is that happening? And the deeper you can get, the more you're actually going to solve the systemic problem instead of just the thing you can put the Band-Aid over right now.
Yeah, that's spot on, and you'll love this, Ryan. But we actually use this that specific technique in customer experience all the time. Mm-hmm. When we think about, you know, journey designs and journey pathing for customers, you know, why did they do that? Why did they go and call the call center when they could have done it online? Why, you know? So we go through that same approach to really get at some of the root causes and really identify where things went down a path that they potentially shouldn't have, or something was pulled out of the system or out of the standard process that we all thought it should work, and they're doing something different. So that's exactly a great technique as well, and I love that idea.
I will tell you why I called the call center instead of doing it online, because I don't really like talking to the bots. And the why behind that is because I like asking the humans on the other end a lot of questions. And the bots can't usually get to the depth of the questions that I am looking for. That just, because I'm usually just more curious than just trying to get my problem solved. But anyway, just so you know, for your customer experience feature.
No, and we can definitely talk through that, because you know, I work in digital and CX, and you know, how do you deal with all the different touch points of online and call center and store and pulling them all together? And I will tell you that the whole intent for every company using bots or scripts or artificial intelligence, they're all trying to find an automatic way to simulate human interaction. Mm-hmm. And we're not there yet. You know, we're not into the sci-fi arena yet that you've seen in some movies, but you know, they're all trying to get one step closer to that interaction. And very few of them actually do it well.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm with you.
Well, stepping back to coaching, what are your thoughts on the difference between coaching and mentorship, or whatever else you might call it, partnership or apprenticeship or whatever it looks like?
Actually, before we go there, let me finish up with, so when I think of coaching, I think of the kind of three parts to kind of how managers should look at how they manage their staff or teams. Mm-hmm. And I think one of them, we talked about a couple of these, but first one is really, how do they have one-on-one feedback with their individuals, the folks on their team? And I think that's really where most coaching is supposedly done. And I think effective one-on-ones are actually done differently than coaching. Effective one-on-ones should be regular. They should be quick. You know, hey, tell me, what are the challenges and struggles you're having? How can I help? You know, is there anything else that we can do to better enable you to get forward? So it really is kind of a very focused and regular enablement meeting. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, enablement. The second part is this idea of feedback and radical candor, because I think you're giving people constant development and improvement in the moment when it happens, not just in some annual, quarterly, or weekly review. Mm-hmm. Then to me, you add on top of that coaching, because then coaching has that different mentality of, I'm now going to help you learn something new, that you, a skill, capability that you didn't have before. So if you take all three of those, you've really got the regular, how do I enable you? The second part of, I'm going to give you feedback to evolve you throughout. And then we're going to tackle some of these more difficult competencies. Mm-hmm. So if you think about that from a coaching model, then you get to mentorship. Mentorship is one where I want to purposefully learn something new. And I'm going to find somebody that models that really well, is really skilled at it, and I'm going to go to them to teach me how to do that specific thing.
Right.
So kind of a mentor is someone that you should find. Like I had one, I've tried to have one at every job, every company I've been at, which is really somebody probably a step or two, typically two, above the position that I'm at. Mm-hmm. That I really respect, and I want to see them do a certain thing. And then I go to them with a specific request saying, I notice you do this wonderfully. I think I need to have that in my career. Would you be willing to mentor me to teach me how to do that?
Right.
And if they're willing to, then, you know, you're great. And then you can set up a structure and a program on how to do that.
Well, I think one of the keys there that I was also taught that has helped me find mentors is start with that compliment, and a very aware compliment, something that you know that they know they're doing well. And you want to also be doing that thing well, but maybe you're not at their level yet. And you want to connect with them there, because from that second, you know, you tell me, you know, Ryan, you're really good at communicating with the people on your podcast, or you're really good at asking questions. And I think, yeah, I love asking questions. It's one of my favorite activities. I can sit here, I'll stop everything I'm doing right now and talk to you about asking questions for the rest of the day. I don't care. So it's one of those things where if you can hit those, I want to call them pain points, but they're kind of like excitement points of where somebody that could be a mentor for you gets really excited or has passion about, then that's where you're going to be able to connect and have a higher probability of locking in somebody that can really teach you something and can really help you experience a better future.
Yeah, you're spot on. And I think it's those passions, you know, the motivations, or just things that they do beautifully well. You know, they're naturals to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think if once you identify that, they're going to be willing to talk to it. They're going to be willing to take a little bit of time to say, oh, yeah, I'm good at this. I want to help somebody else with that. It's fun, right?
It's fun. Yeah.
So why wouldn't I? So I think, you know, I've been a mentor in customer experience for almost a decade now. And I've also been a mentee through most of my career. And a couple of tips that I will share that I think are worthwhile in the mentorship, because I don't think we do enough of it, and I don't think we always structure it right. But yeah. What I've learned over my time is the mentee is the one that seeks it out. The mentee gets the benefit. The mentee Correct. Is the one that should take the control and outline, here's what I would like to specifically learn. Here's when I'd like to learn it by. Here's how we're going to hold everybody accountable. And when that happens, you're motivated to get it, and you're using somebody else's knowledge and guidance and willingness to help you. So you've got to lead the process. I've seen some mentees saying, I want a mentor. Tell me what I should do.
Or I'll follow you around and hope I learn something. But if you don't know what you're trying to learn, you're not going to learn anything.
Oh, and it's like, well, what are you getting out of that? Like, it's so unstructured. There's no real plan that it's going to typically fail. And honestly, it's a little bit of a disrespect to the mentor because they're taking the time on something that they're passionate about. And you don't have enough of an idea of what you're really hoping to get out of to really make it worthwhile for both parties.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one. The other case that I've seen where mentorships and mentees don't always get along is, as a mentee, let's say I come to you, Ryan, and say, I really want you to learn how to ask questions like you do. And you're like, oh, great. You know, so we set up a schedule, we talk through it, and then you start to give me all this advice of, here's what works for you, and here's how you think. Like, well, no, that's not going to work. No. And I start to not take your guidance, right. You know, say, oh, here's another way. Like, again, it's a bit of a disrespect, but it's also a matter of, why am I, if I thought you were great at doing this, why am I not open to listening to how you go about it? And again, check me internally to say, what is my behavior? Why do I feel differently about how he's doing it? We all find our ways of doing things that work for us, but I think it's just a matter of, the mentor is really there to give you that guide. They're there to listen, review, and suggest, but you've got to be open to the suggestions. Then find a way that it works for you, but at least take that acknowledgement first.
Exactly. If you're really listening, or you're really engaging with what they are telling you, then you're going to take that information and you're going to be able to, as I've said, everyone is creative. These are things that you are able to connect in your brain if you're actually listening and think, I get why they're doing this. And that, you know, if I've asked enough questions, this makes sense to me. Now, why would I not do it that way? And then in what way would I do it where this strategy can be shifted to work for me?
Yeah, exactly. start with that in their approach and their thinking, and then adapt to your own, make mm-hmm. it yours, own it. Cause you'll have to want to know that you're comfortable doing it and that you have an ability to just react in the way that you want to react in the time. But yeah, definitely always start with their approach and see if that works for you or what you need to do to modify it. So I think that's awesome. But we could all use more mentors. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I know in some industries, we don't have enough mentors out there. People really want, you know, mentees are looking for guidance and they spend a lot of time on the internet and they're not really going to that human that they respect and admire that are doing these things well, and that mentorship's not really structured well. So I think we should really look at how do we develop that more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in some countries, it actually is kind of more of the not only mentorship, but the apprenticeship, which is like, I want to learn how to do a skill really well. Let me, you know, provide my services for free to follow and learn and you know, go through the whole process. And we just don't really do that here.
No, we don't. And I'm, you know, it's probably a mix of that is a little bit harder in less hands-on, I want to say activities, but like work. If it's brain-focused work, where you're not doing, you're kind of doing a different thing every single day, and it's more about problem solving, then it's a lot harder to be a problem solving apprentice, because if the person you're learning from is solving the problems, then you're not, and you're not actually doing, you can't actually be doing the skills. But
yeah. No, that's true.
Who knows?
But yeah, I know in terms of my programs, I've had people do the preliminary of it, and then I'll say, oh, okay, here's the next level of that.
Right.
So there are certain ways that you can build it into a program, but yeah, it's tough. You're right.
All right, Brett. Well, I have had an excellent time. I would love to hear your book suggestions. We've already mentioned two, I believe, so far, maybe more. But what else do you have? I see Emotional Intelligence 2.0 on your shelf behind you, and I'm loving that.
Yeah, so a couple ones that I think we did mention that I think are interesting. They're for books, I'd go with The Coaching Habit is one that I think is interesting. It's by, I'm going to get the name wrong, but Michael Bungay Stanier. But it's really about how do you form new habits or break new habits? Mm-hmm. And kind of finding ways to, you know, especially if you go back to the early part of this conversation, is just how do I think differently with my behaviors? What am I doing? It's a good book to help you break through and out of your standard approach.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a really good one. Another book that I know we talked about was Radical Candor. So Kim Scott. I think that one's a great one about constructive feedback, both giving and receiving. I think that one's definitely worthwhile, especially from a kind of a professional or even just, you know, friends could use this too, right?
Sure. How do
you tell somebody honestly? A couple other, maybe some online resources. I don't know. Are you
still Yeah, absolutely. We've done that a few times.
Okay. There is a manager tools. So in the professional realm, if you want to learn about kind of the conducting one-on-ones, the feedback, the coaching, there's a manager tools podcast. And I'm not trying to recommend another podcast on yours. it's talking through kind of how those are structured.
Sure.
Manager tools. And the other one is going back to the fixed and growth mindset. There's a site that you can test your own mindset to see if you are fixed or not. And it's a blog.mindsetnetworks.com.
Perfect. I love assessments. So
everyone's curious.
Fantastic.
Right?
We hope. That's the goal.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I thought I would be, oh, I'm open. I got a great growth mindset. I just barely made it past the fifth. So even as much as I think I live and breathe this every day, I still have room for it.
Right. Absolutely. We all do. Well, listeners, you can find these suggestions, prior episodes, recommendations, and a list of my 5-star favorites at bookshop.org/shop/EQ. Please use this link to support the podcast and shop local. If you have started your journey in the growth mindset but aren't sure where to go next, and you're looking for that mentor, you've got them. Reach out anytime via my website, which is in the at EQ Book Club Linktree link, or just by messaging me on the at EQ Book Club account on Instagram. This is what I do as a coach. So let's do it. If you are listening to this and you know anyone in the workforce, which I would assume is most of you, if not all of you, this might apply to them. So send this to all your coworkers and your friends, or at least one. That'd be really nice. Follow and message me on social media on the at EQ Book Club account. If you have any feedback, I'd love to hear it, positive or negative. I got some good negative feedback recently, and I'm telling you, I loved it. So don't be afraid. This is also where you can find a bunch of relevant links to book recommendations, episode updates, and quotes that I find interesting from these episodes. Brett, thank you for being here. Everyone else, it's a great day for a day, y'all. I love you. Goodbye.